I'm Jake Mintz.
And I'm Jordan Schusterman. On this Wednesday edition of Baseball Barbacast, we are previewing the NL Central. But first, we are going to talk about the first regular season game of the 2024 season, which happened in Korea?
Yeah, the Dodgers, will they remain undefeated? They're on pace to do so. We'll also chat about the MLBPA eating itself alive and Blake Snell signing with the San Francisco Giants.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that does not need an alarm to wake up for early morning baseball. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and my circadian rhythm knows ball. I woke up at 5:51 on my own before my 5:55 alarm.
So did I. I think I woke up at like 5:40-ish. Of course, I'm staying with you here in New York. I'm heading back tonight, but I am so glad that I was here, that we could share some early morning baseball once again, Jake. And we are, of course, going to talk about it today. The Dodgers are still undefeated. They're going to win a lot of baseball games this year. This was not the most beautiful victory, but a win is a win. A loss is a loss for the Padres. We are going to talk about that, of course. Blake Snell signed with the Giants since we talked on Monday. And on this episode, we're talking about the NL Central. NL Central, a division that I'm actually excited to talk about the NL Central. I'm much more excited to talk about this than compared to last year. Okay. That is same with the AL Central, which we're doing on Friday. Much more excited to talk about that. But before we get to that, we do want to hit some of these new some of the news, like Blake Snell, MLBPA, some interesting reporting about what's going on with the PA. But let's talk about the game we just watched. The Dodgers, they won. It was not. Did the Dodgers win or did the Padres lose, Jake?
Yep.
All right.
Absolutely. a little bit of both.
Yeah.
They were not on the train on the way here. You said we're not going to analyze this like a playoff game.
No, I refuse.
We refuse to do that.
It feels like it because it was we were all watching the same game.
And the Padres used 100 pitchers.
Yeah. And because there were some interesting pitching decisions, I feel like and because we were all tweeting about the same game, my instinct was like, oh, Mike Schill, like, is he going to be able to handle this? And I was like, it's March 20th. Relax.
Everyone needs to just chill. We woke up. It was cool to wake up. It was cool to see the game in Korea. Mm-hmm. I understand why some fans are like, classic MLB, not like classic MLB scheduling opening day in the middle of the night in a different country. They don't understand ball. There are a lot of other things I think that you can criticize the league for.
No shortage.
This, to me, is not one of them. If we want to make this game international, taking it on the road is a good way to do that. And the only way to do that somewhere like Korea is to have the games at this point in the season because of jet lag. You can do London games for East Coast teams because the jet lag's not as bad. You can't do that in this case for Korean games. So it's good.
It's fine.
I'm glad. Weird, but
and I
it's
hope
fine.
We continue to see, of course, games in other countries. We don't care what time these games are starting. So we were up. We were watching. Tyler Glass now goes 5 innings. Darvish goes not 5 innings. A lot of deep counts.
Ooh.
We were spiking every variation of breaking ball. And it looked like a spring training start still for both of them, to be honest. Neither of them was especially sharp.
Yeah.
But it was a great, Glasnow walks 4 and only strikes out 3, but he only allows 2 hits. And the Padres really lose this game because they have 4 hits all game. But it was a great Glasnow reminder of like, even when he is a mess, it's very difficult to hit him.
This game was like a high school basketball team. 3-2 zone.
3-2 zone. Yeah. Yep. I would say so. They don't do 3-2 zone in the big leagues, in the grandes ligas of hoops.
I don't know.
Okay. All right. You're making me think about high school basketball defenses. What were some other highlights in this game? There were zero extra base hits for either team.
Yeah. That's because of the time difference.
So we have to adjust.
Is yeah.
Like a okay. Interesting. I should have considered that. Padres offense was not great. Dodgers offense had some hard hit balls. Otani has two hits. He's the hardest hit of the night. 112 exit velo. That's not normal, but
he does that all the time.
Let's remember that he is amazing.
Jackson Merrill, 0-for-3 in his MLB debut with 3 hard hit balls.
Yep.
All 3 were outs. That I would say is an encouraging relative.
Doesn't mean he's going to keep the ball. Oh, this is your first hard hit ball in the big leagues? Probably not.
Oh, interesting.
I doubt it. I could be wrong. Do you think he was like, oh, hey, that was over 95 miles an hour?
If Jackson Merrill...
could you throw that in the dugout?
If he hit a ball 124 miles an hour, which would break
if
the record.
The record, but it was
an
out.
The first batted ball of his career, but it was a line out. Would he keep the ball?
Well, I think the Hall of Fame would probably want that ball,
okay.
No matter what.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it was kind of a sloppy game. We had a million pitchers. We had a million walks. And then let's just go to the one highlight that we'll sustain from this game, which was a low light for baseball equipment.
Key moment of the game.
The Dodgers, you know, have a couple guys on, and it's like Gavin Lux chops one to the right side, and it looks like on first glance it was like, oh, Cronenworth at first base just missed it,
sneaks under his glove.
Yeah, it was like sneaks under his glove. Oh, it could have been a double play. Oh, that would have been huge. And then we get the dreaded slow-mo. What happened here, Jake? What did we see on this slow-mo?
We saw the web, not a web gem. We saw the web of unnamed glove company tear as the ball went through the webbing of Cronenworth's glove and into the outfield for the Dodgers go-ahead run. The San Diego Padres, who last year were one of the most unlucky teams in the history of the league of the sport, begin 2024 with a comically bad bounce. And for all the Padres fans who woke up early for this, we hear you.
Or
we
stayed
see
up.
You. Or stayed up.
Yeah.
You're in our hearts. You're in our thoughts and our prayers.
Maybe they will have some luck in game two. But yeah, Otani and Betts, you know, add on and the Dodgers close it out. Evan Phillips quietly, maybe the best reliever on earth.
Evan Phillips.
Nobody cares, but he does have the lowest ERA of any reliever over the last few seasons. And then the Dodgers win.
Evan Phillips, have your agent call us because we want to help you with branding. If you're going to be this good, you can't be this boring. And if you want to be this boring, that's fine. But we have to, like Corey Kluber it. Okay, we need to build you up as the boring reliever. Yeah. But right now, the status quo, you're going to save 68 games. Like you could break the saves record. Yeah.
And Brewster's hurt to start the year.
So
it's not even a question who's throwing the ninth.
We need to up this. I need a little bit of spice on this.
It's just the way he likes it. We got a little Joe Kelly in the eighth. That you know.
That's enough spice for the whole bullpen.
Yeah, our condolences to Craig Goldstein having to watch Joe Kelly at 7 a.m. Anyway, Dodgers win. Tomorrow we will have Joe Musgrove against Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Very excited for that one. But yeah, I mean, this was not exactly the most beautiful baseball game. But that Cronenworth, that Cronenworth play was really something in the larger context of both of these teams, because the whole game it was like, all right, Dodgers will come back at some point, and for that to really be what sparks it was just hilarious.
If you are unnamed glove company or a rival of unnamed glove company and would love to sponsor our show, you can email us. Mm-hmm. Let us know.
Yeah, baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Let's move on to a couple other pieces of news before we get to the NL Central. Let's stay in the NL West. The former Padre, Blake Snell, is now on the Giants. Another signing that if you told us happened at the beginning of the offseason, I'd be like, yeah, definitely. Sure, makes sense. But as with the Matt Chapman one, it took a little bit longer to get there. And the main takeaway here, on top of the fact that, wow, the Giants have added a lot of good baseball players this winter, is they won. And Scott Boras, and they won in the sense that they knew, it's this thing I've been saying for the last month and a half, they realize he needs us more than we need him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to realize that, and Blake Snell's going to wake up one day, and he's going to tell Scott Boras, I would like to be on a baseball team now. So whatever that means, we're going to do that. And so they come to, you know, they get the two-year deal. He's going to make, you know, $30 million this year. He's got an opt-out. And good for the Giants. And I'm getting, you know, Blake Snell's going to make a lot of money this year, but it is a tough look for to win your second Cy Young and have to settle for a deal like this.
Yes. Scott Boras, no matter how you spin it, it's not the offseason he would have wanted. Mm-hmm. He is going to end up with the big Boras four, that being Jordan Montgomery, Blake Snell, Matt Chapman, Cody Bellinger. Montgomery's still out there, but it seems likely that all four of them will get below what they expected. Now, yes, Jung-Hoo Lee got a great deal from the Giants, more than I think we thought Lee would get. That being said, it's a disappointing offseason for Boras, no matter how you talk about it.
Yep.
Kudos, though, to the Giants from a player acquisition standpoint. Their winter, when the dust is now settled, is very impressive. Yeah. And I wish we could redo the NL West preview, because I do think them acquiring Snell and the Padres acquiring Cease does change the complexion of that division a little bit in an interesting way.
Or at least the NL postseason picture. I think it certainly kind of puts the Giants much closer to, like, they should be in the mix for sure, right? And when you combine it with our already relative, not concern, but maybe we're a tad low on Arizona, it really does make that group of teams really interesting.
Now, why we like what the Giants did on the field this winter, I think we have to just say, this entire Rennell Brooks Moon situation with the Giants is a total disaster. We had Rennell on our podcast two podcast homes ago.
Yes.
Rennell, the longtime public address announcer, 24 years doing the PA for the Giants, was not brought back this year. It seems like there's some drama there where the Giants maybe didn't treat her right based on some of the reporting we've seen. Rennell's awesome. If that's the case and Rennell wanted to stay and the Giants didn't want to keep her, that's
embarrassment for a
thousand reasons. And we love Rennell. And the impact she's had on this game is enormous. And
incredible. And that news happening on the same day, like, the Giants are still there. The fact that they can add this many good baseball players and still find a way to have some not so good vibes is embarrassing. It's embarrassing. But I have to say, we have to give credit to the front office, because they had this. This really is an incredible number of good players to add. I don't know. And they needed to do that. They recognized that. And they were like, all right, we're going to spend. And they did.
The big criticism with the Giants last year, they don't have enough good baseball players. Now they just might.
Yep.
Speaking of weird vibes, let's very briefly talk about what's going on with the MLBPA. Story came out yesterday reporting Evan Drellick and Ken Rosenthal at The Athletic about how there was an attempted coup d'etat. One of my favorite words. An attempted coup d'etat within the MLB Players Association. The number two at the in the union is somebody named Bruce Meyer. Bruce Meyer is kind of like the main negotiator when they negotiate with the league over...
So Tony Clark is the head. He's the one you see do the press conferences and is kind of the face of the PA.
He's hard to miss. Enormous.
a large gentleman. Yep.
Former big leaguer. He's the head of the situation. Anyway, a number of players and agents thought that Meyer and Clark were too cozy with Scott Boras, and through a guy named Harry Marino, who did a lot of work with the minor league union stuff.
And was involved in the negotiations on behalf of the PA during the negotiations for the CBA.
They wanted basically Harry to replace Bruce Meyer as the number two. And this all culminated in what seemed to be a very contentious Zoom call a day or two ago. Now, this is all very much in progress. This is a very good example of a story that people like us inside the world of baseball care more about than the average fan who, you know, I think if you listen to our pod, you are an educated fan. Mm-hmm. However, there are a lot of us who just want to be like, Otani go brr, and not think too hard. Mm-hmm. This, though, is very interesting, and how it will play out will have a huge impact over the next CBA negotiations. Mm-hmm. I don't have any other thoughts beyond that, but it is a enormous developing story that people should keep an eye on.
Well said. Now we should talk about the baseball. The National League Central has five teams in it, as we mentioned.
Didn't always.
Used to have six.
Used to have six.
It's funny to think about the Astros, you know, who have dominated the AL West, right? After it's like, think about how many games they'd be winning the NL Central by in recent years. But anyway, Pirates, we are going to go in order, as we have in our other division previews, from the bottom to the top, in order of the official over-unders that we're getting from BetMGM. And this is especially relevant in this division. in the division, which I believe to be the flattest. And what I mean by that is the distance or projected, you know, gap between the first place and last place team is comfortably the smallest of any division in the league.
I believe it is 11 games.
Yeah. Between, again, projections, over-unders, whatever. The difference between who we expect to be in first, which is a very much up for debate, and who we expect to be in last, which is probably Pittsburgh, but, you know, you could argue otherwise.
I will.
Is way smaller than any other division. And that is what makes it very interesting. So this order, you could argue that we should be doing this in any order. That is just, we're going to stay consistent. And let us begin with the Pirates of Pittsburgh. Jake, tell me about the Pirates of Pittsburgh.
How'd they do last year? If the season ended on May 4th.
Oh, they were
on
fire, man. It was just an unbelievable April that we knew was not going to sustain. But they were so good that it was like, maybe they can hang around until the break. Yeah. And boy, did that not happen.
Much like real Pirates, the good times did not last. Mm. And they were shut down on the high seas by regression to the mean. And
the resurgent Cincinnati Reds. And
losing O'Neill Cruz was also a big part of that. But what they do over the offseason, just a classic Pittsburgh Pirates offseason, baby.
Yeah.
Rowdy Tellez, Aroldis Chapman, Michael A. Taylor. Enough one-year deals that'll make your head spin.
Yeah. They traded for some too, right? I mean, they traded for Marco Gonzalez. They, I guess, signed Martin Perez, right? As you said. So, Yasmani Grandal, I guess, coming in as a veteran catcher.
No multi-year deals.
Don't even know.
Don't even.
Well, unless you're Mitch Keller.
Unless you're Mitch Keller.
We can extend Mitch Keller. If you're one of our own, we will consider giving you an extension. Otherwise, don't expect anything super-duper long-term.
Here's the starting lineup. Projected. Behind the dish, Henry Davis is going to get his shot. Andy Rodriguez tore his UCL, got Tommy John surgery. He's going to be out for the year. Yasmani Grandal will be the backup, probably. First base is Rowdy Tellez. Second base, Leover Puguero, I think, is going to get a bunch of time there. Jiwon Bae is going to be hurt to start the year. I expect to see him at second. Maybe Tamar Johnson later on in the season, if we're lucky. Third base, Cabrian Hayes, better offensively last year. Then you realize, elite with the glove. O'Neill Cruz at shortstop broke. Did I say tears ACL? That's wrong. He broke his fibula last year, and he is back and healthy and looks unbelievable in spring training. The outfield will be Jack Sawinski in right field. Michael A. Taylor, one of your favorites.
Yes.
Finally, someone signed him. He'll be in center. And Brian Reynolds, this one's for the nerds, who had a higher ex-woba last year than Jose Ramirez. Did you know that? I did.
Come on. Jose Ramirez, he's... I mean, no one, the whole thing is Jose Ramirez is who cares about his ex-woba.
No, I understand.
I thought you were going to say like Aaron Judge. And I was like, no, whoa!
I'm just saying. Yeah,
Brian Reynolds is good.
Ryan Reynolds is pretty good.
Ryan Reynolds.
I said Brian.
I know. I just making sure we're enunciating because I have no comments on Ryan Reynolds. I have nothing to say about
Deadpool
him.
4 has just Brian Reynolds.
I
want to make sure
I have no opinions on him. So Brian Reynolds, though, is good.
The charisma gap between Ryan Reynolds and Brian Reynolds.
That I could comment on. Yes, that we could comment on.
Starting rotation. Mitch Keller, Martin Perez, Marco Gonzalez, Luis L. Ortiz, and potentially Jared Jones.
Oh, it better be. I mean, as we're recording this now, we don't know if he's going to make their opening day rotation. We know Skeens is already sent down. But this guy, who was one of their top prospects, has looked like one of the best pitchers in spring training. And it's like, okay, if you're going to argue Skeens, you know, should be belong in, oh, he's one of their five best pitchers. I mean, Jones has a great case for that too, and he's done it in AAA, right? He's blitzed through the minor leagues. So I hope he's in the rotation start the year. You know, 22-year-old right-hander throwing 100, but we'll see.
And then the bullpen: David Bednar, Aroldis Chapman, who they signed, and Colin Holderman, who's better than you realize. Mm-hmm. One big question: where's the offense coming from? This team is projected for 74 wins. Last year, they finished, I believe, with 74. But still had a really just brutal offense for stretches of the season.
Yeah.
Like, if this is a playoff team, how are they scoring runs?
Yeah, I think that that's a good, especially when you have guys like Cabrian Hayes, who we've like been begging, like, come on, like the offensive breakout is coming. And Brian Reynolds, you know what you're getting, but he's not carrying your offense. And Sawinski is such a hot and cold hitter. I mean, he's going on crazy hot streaks and then he's hitting 150 for 3 weeks in a row. Cruz can change that. Very quickly. I still think it is kind of a unique leadoff hitter. I'm still not sure. I guess we just had the conversation about Schwarber's leadoff guy, but is O'Neill Cruz going to walk enough to be like the ideal leadoff hitter? I don't really know what the best lineup configuration is here, but there needs to be a little bit more just consistent intimidation in this lineup. Maybe that becomes Henry Davis. Maybe that is O'Neill Cruz. That's the question.
You know, when people are talking about the Dodgers or the Braves and it's like they scare you from 1 to 9, very rarely do you hear someone talk about a lineup like you get under 5 and I mean, it's nap time.
Yeah.
That's
what
the Pirates have been
that's time. Yeah. That's so, and so that's going to have to happen because I honestly feel like the pitching staff at this point, especially the bullpen, like might end up maybe kind of underrated. I mean, there's, I think, more reasons for optimism, especially if you factor in, you know, maybe 3 or 4 months of Paul Skeens. Like, there's way more reasons, even if you look deeper, to be excited on the mound. The position player group, we're just still waiting to see who are actually these core pieces.
And that's why my key player is O'Neill Cruz. He's the one player on this team who could win the MVP. Mm-hmm. He has the talent to do it. I think he's still a year away from having enough growth to do it consistently enough to be that type of player, but it's in there.
Well, he doesn't need to grow.
By grow, I mean like...
Okay. Doesn't need
to be. On the inside.
Anything. Yeah, okay, I got you. Grow as a player, not as a person. I agree with that. I'm going with Henry Davis, though, because, I mean, both of those guys, we were really hoping to see that happen for them last year. Henry Davis, for him to now have it kind of clear out for him to be the catcher... Said it on all his previews. I mean, you're going to draft him number one. He's going to be the catcher. There's no way when they took him number one, the plan A was for him to be in right field. And that's what made his debut last year so strange. And so now that he's going to get a chance to catch, and hopefully that bat will translate. He's also had a nice spring. It's just massive. I mean, again, when you're picking 1-1, like you got to nail those picks. And that's the whole point of taking him at that point was that so in 2024, he's one of your anchors. He has the opportunity to do that, but we have to see if it's going to happen.
What makes us laugh about this team? Well, can they get Cole Reagans for Aroldis Chapman? Just like
or someone even remotely close to as good as Cole Reagans in the scenario that they are not good and they trade Aroldis Chapman at the deadline. Good luck. The Royals have set the bar quite high in that sense, but it wouldn't be surprising to see them have do a similar playbook.
And then, of course, this team employs friend of the podcast, Brent Honeywell, one of our favorite people. Mm-hmm.
And I really hope he makes the team. He has looked good in spring training as well. And we will see what happens.
74.5 is the over under. I will take the over. I am optimistic about the Pittsburgh Pirates this year. I think they can get outs. I like Derek Shelton as a manager. I think this offense is going to hit just enough. And I will say, the over, but they're not making the playoffs.
Yeah. Same. I'm going to go over as well. And but if I just hope, I really hope all these teams finish in like a 10 win gap.
I want five teams with 82 wins.
Yeah. I want this coming down to the end here.
Let's move on to the Milwaukee Brewers, who won this division a year ago before one of the more forgettable home playoff appearances in recent memory. In recent forgettery, what did they do over the offseason? A bunch, actually. But most notably is what was done to them, and that was losing manager and Milwaukee hero Craig Counsell to the Cubs.
Oh my gosh!
One of the most fascinating stories we had all winter. Remember when they spray painted "ass" on the sign at his high school?
Well, I want to rewind a little bit. That day, when
ass day,
when we remember, we were like, "Oh, is he going to go to the Mets?"
Yeah,
and it was like we kind of knew Craig Counsell was deciding. Is he going to stay with the Brewers or is he going to go to the Mets? Like that was the assumption is that was what we were talking about. And that report, Craig Counsell will be leaving the Brewers and it will not be the Mets. That like 25 minutes where we were all just like, what in the world is happening? Was one of the crazier parts of the whole offseason, even though it was at the very beginning. Correct. So still one of the wildest sequences we've seen but for a manager possible. Pat Murphy, who was already there, he stays in. Let's also mention Ricky Weeks, who will be the associate manager, which is, I believe, not a title that any other... it's just like a college baseball thing.
I believe that Will Venable has this title with the Rangers.
Okay, I'm gonna check you on that. But tell me who's on the Brewers.
Why is that in my head?
I just hope you're right.
Here's who the Brewers have. William Contreras. Behind the dish, he rules. And I love that they taught him how to catch.
You are correct. Will Venable, associate manager. So I guess there is precedent.
How about that? There you go. First base, Rhys Hoskins, who they signed over the winter, friend of the show. Second base is going to be some Bryce Terang, some Joey Ortiz, who they got in the Corbin Burns trade. We probably should have mentioned that they traded Corbin Burns away.
Oh, well, we will certainly mention it when we review this starting rotation. But sorry, finish the lineup.
Third base will be Sal Frelick, who played a lot of outfield last year, and some Andrew Monasterio over there. Willy Adames at shortstop. He's a free agent this winter. Christian Yelich keeps on trucking, baby. In left field, Jackson Chourio, who they extended for quite a bit of change for quite a number of years. He is 20 years old, and he is likely to be the starting center fielder on opening day, making his MLB debut. Garrett Mitchell in right. Gary Sanchez DHing. This team is really kind of fun to think about, I have to say. Until you get to the pitchers, because the starting rotation is Freddy Peralta, Colin Ray, who I just remember as the guy who got traded and like AJ Preller lied about how injured he was to the Marlins. And then he showed up in Miami and the Marlins were like, you break it, you buy it. And they sent him back to the Padres. Jacob Junis, DL Hall, who was in the Burns trade, Joe Ross, and whenever he gets healthy, Wade Miley. The bullpen, which lost Devin Williams for a number of months after he fractured his back, will be anchored by Joel Payamps, Abner Uribe, and Trevor McGill, the brother of Big Drip.
All of whom were amazing last year. So while you might not have known that until I just said it, they have options here to backfill Devin. Now, Devin Williams is a top five reliever on earth, so you can't really replace that. But production-wise, they are in an okay spot in the bullpen, as the Brewers often are. But that decision to trade Corbin Burns, combined with the decision to sign Rhys Hoskins, was the theme of the winter of how good do the Brewers think they are? How good do the Brewers think they can be? Are they planning on being?
Yeah.
And with this many young players in the mix, particularly on offense, this can go in a lot of different directions. But of course, we have to start with the council thing, because that's the big question. Like, does it feel different to watch the Brewers? I mean, Craig Council was one of the longest tenured managers, and now it's not a total outsider coming in, right, to replace him, but he was arguably the face of the team over the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. And that's rare, I would say, in baseball nowadays.
He had an outsized abnormal impact on the organization. Part of that is because he is the consensus best at this thing in baseball. You ask folks around the industry.
There's a reason the Cubs paid him more than most of the players on their team.
There's a reason the Cubs gave him $40 million, right? That's number one. Number two is he's from there. And so from a cultural perspective in that city, he held and still holds meaning and purpose. And then because he was eking out wins, it felt like he always had a little bit more say on roster construction, I think, than you typically get from some managers in baseball, or at least his voice was in the room, maybe a little bit louder than some other places. But Council leaving is a big deal. Pat Murphy is a very different type of guy, but because he was there and has been there, and is familiar with this front office, it will be very... I'm just so fascinated to see how things change, it if they do change at all.
Yeah, not that Council is like boring, but as far as quotes go, Pat Murphy has said more interesting things this spring training than Craig Council did his entire tenure. So in that sense, there will probably be some entertaining things along the way. But who are your key players? I mean, just again, so many young guys to choose from. I'm really not worried about a few veterans. I'm not worried about Reese even coming back from injury. I just think he's going to be exactly what they paid for. Of course, there's a million question marks on the pitching staff, but as far as projecting out the future and the big picture outlook of the Brewers, we have to focus on the younger players.
I thought about putting Yelich on here, and then I just came to the depressing conclusion that he is what he is. Yeah. Until he shows otherwise, he's 110 OPS plus and...
Which, again, for like a left fielder DH who is making $25 million for the next 4 seasons, like five seasons, that's not great. But there was a time when it was like, oh, this is going in a really wrong direction. And he's come back from
that. It started to smell like Chris Davis.
Oh, my God. That's an atrociously insulting thing to say. That is like, oh my, Christian Yelich, I'm sorry, you're not watching this. Chris Davis went like 0 for 60. What was it? Like, all right, I'm sorry. Oh my God, I don't know how good is your smelling? How far away would it have to smell like Chris Davis? Christian Yelich, I'm sorry, just because your name is Chris and you're a lefty bat who's like not as good as you used to be. Oh my, how could you say that? All right. Sorry. Who's your key player? That was, oh my gosh. I can't even believe.
I'm Chris Yelich. I'm sorry, dude. And Chris Davis. I'm also sorry. My key player is DL Hall, who they Milwaukee got back in the Burns deal. Just because there's not a lot of upside in the rotation besides Freddie Peralta, who's very good. But Colin Ray, Jacob Junis, Joe Ross, Wade Miley could all be solid. Joe Ross, by the way. Could all
I can't be, believe Joe Ross is yeah. alive and in a starting rotation.
They could all God be bless solid. Him.
Yeah.
But DL Hall could either not be a starter, like
back
not
in AAA.
Up, or back in AAA, AAA. Yeah. Or he could be in the bullpen, or he could be really good in the rotation. Yeah. So I think how he develops is really crucial to them.
Also, from a watchability standpoint, the days between Peralta and DL Hall starts is quite a, you know, a fluctuating experience. I'm going with Jackson Chourio. For all the Jackson Holiday discussion, rightfully so, this guy is even, I mean, this is an unbelievable thing that he's going to be probably their opening day, you know, center fielder, born in March of 2004. He's going to be the first player born in 2004 to make it to the major leagues. And this is Jackson Holiday, also 2004. But I feel like we might be underselling him. I mean, it's not like people don't know who he is, but it all happens so quickly that if he shows up and, you know, he's 20 homers and 40 steals and he's playing awesome defense in center field, like, it's absurd to think he could be anything remotely close to what Acuña was at the beginning of his career, but he sure is on the same path and on the same timeline. So I don't know how quickly he's going to get there, but that could also change the complexion of this lineup pretty quickly. Because right now we expect him to, you know, be hitting eighth. Maybe he's just amazing immediately and he's at the top of the lineup.
We had something else in here that made us laugh, but I'm going to double down on the Chris Davis, Christian Yelich thing. So yeah. Christian Yelich
yeah.
signed the extension in 2020. Right. And then had a 101 OPS plus and then a 109 OPS plus. Yeah, sorry. I'd take that back. Went 110 OPS plus 101
yep.
after signing the extension. Chris Davis
yep.
went 110 and 96 uh-huh. in the 2 years after he signed the extension.
Yeah.
So in the 2 years after they signed, yeah. or I guess he was a free agent contract. Uh-huh. 2 years after his declining,
yeah.
starting to smell.
Yeah, you're right.
Now, Chris Davis opened 2018, I think was the year where he was hitless and had a 49 OPS plus and then and struck out, I believe, 192 times.
Yep. Yeah, he did.
Which is not
yeah.
good.
Actually, was one of the worst hitters we've seen.
I just, can I,
century, yeah.
can I say something to you? Yeah. I think my comparison there was in between your response and the comparison itself. Like, I think... what okay. I said was incorrect and insulting.
Yeah.
And I think your incredulousness was too far. I think it...
yeah. See, I don't know. I just... the fact that, like, that your brain could go there is why... That was what was so wild to me.
Yeah.
Because of how extreme it got. Like, I mean, the numbers you just gave, like, that was a compelling retort. However, because of how extreme it was... Very quickly after that.
No, but ignore that.
Just
no. I did not say
yeah,
it's
not
the
ignoring
same.
It.
Started to smell. Don't ever be surprised by what comes out of my brain. over under for this ball club.
76.5.
I'm going to take the under. I am officially worried about this team. Okay. I think they will finish behind the Pirates. I just don't believe in the starting rotation. Mm-hmm. And I think... this bullpen has been amazing in recent years. And I think part of that is because there's been enough length from the starting rotation that allows...
And Council's Wizard.
And Council's Wizardry. Mm-hmm. I think that those two things will put more strain on the bullpen. I still think it'll be a very good bullpen. That losing Williams for 3 months makes it even more complicated. Yep. I just don't think they're going to get enough outs to be a competitive team.
I'm wearing my Microbrews hat today. Shout out to the Carolina Mudcats. I'm taking the over. Ooh. I don't think this is a playoff team, but I think they are going to BS their way to like 82 wins. I really do. I don't know how, and I think, but maybe Jackson Chourio is a big part of that.
Do they finish above the Cubs?
No. I still think fourth place. Like, I think they're just all going to be right around there.
So they don't finish above the Cubs. Would they have if they had kept Council?
No. I'm sure Craig Council's a great manager, but I will always think that managers are overrated. that's where I'm at on that. But wait, we're about to talk about the Cubs soon. But before we get to the Reds, Cubs, and Cardinals, let us take a quick break. We'll be right back here on the NL Central Preview on Baseball Barbecue.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. We just argued for another 10 minutes during the break about Chris Davis and Christian Yelich.
Maybe. Let us know. BaseballBarbacast@gmail.com. I'm curious, like,
people are going to defend you.
People's reaction were to that.
People are going to back you up on this, 100%.
No. And again, we talked it through more. Jake pushed me ever so slightly closer to him being mildly reasonable, but...
Oh, thank you so much for admitting that you're wrong.
All right. We have three more teams in the NL Central. The next team is the Reds of Cincinnati, a team I am very familiar with, the team I currently live the closest to, at least for another few months, and of course for all of the last year and a half.
Are the Reds moving to Vegas?
The Reds are... Oh, the Reds are not going anywhere. I'm the one that is moving. Last year, the Reds won 82 games.
So close.
Who cares? Well, they were still mathematically alive going into the final weekend of the season. They were still mathematically alive. And this is a team that lost 100 games in 2022. It was a team that went from one of the least watchable, least relevant bad teams in 2022 at the end of that year to one of the most watchable, like, we got to tune in for the Reds for much of the summer.
Electric month.
Unbelievable. June. June was that Braves series all about. It was an incredibly fun season, and they just ran out of arms. I mean, they weren't expecting to need the arms to compete for a postseason spot, and they just ran out of gas. They were injured, and it just and yet they still got shockingly close to making it. Now, what did they do this winter? A ton. It was like, all right, how are you going to build on that? The Reds said, you know what? We're going to spend some money. But they did it in a fascinating way.
Business was booming at the Castellini Vegetable Factory.
Absolutely. They were like, all right, sure. We're going to sign a bunch of free agents. We're going to give Frankie Montas $16 million. Talk about some of the Boris wins from this offseason.
Yeah.
Frankie Montas, who was now going to be the opening day starter, gets a massive one-year deal. They bring in Nick Martinez and Emilio Pagan to kind of shore up the middle innings. Nick Martinez, who might also be getting some starts while some of their other starters are trying to get healthy. They bring back the hometown kid, Brent Suter, who is ecstatic to be a Cincinnati Red, the team he grew up cheering for. And then on offense, they signed Jamer Candelario, switch hitting infielder, who is, it's like, well, what do they need an infielder for? Well, apparently for when Noelvi Marte gets suspended for PEDs. Because Marte getting popped for 80 games, that is very unfortunate. Now, he will be back at some point. And
not in the playoffs.
Not in the playoffs, probably, from what we know. Which is
not allowed to play in the playoffs if he gets suspended. Also, just quickly, this is a bummer, but good reminder, more players are on the juice than we know or realize at any given time. I don't know of anyone, actually, to be clear, but this...
I mean, yeah.
PEDs are not a non-thing in baseball.
Yeah.
It's that simple. It is not what it once was, but obviously... It still exists, and it's just important. We're going to get one a year forever.
Yeah, well, again, probably it's disappointing, and it's a huge bummer because when young players it sucks at this point in the career. A guy who was really came up last year, one of their 16 players that made a major league debut with the Reds in 2023. He will not be a part of their first few months of the season. But now they have Candelario, and here's what the rest of the lineup looks like behind the plate: Tyler Stevenson. At first base will not be Joseph Daniel Votto, who is on the Blue Jays now.
What?
Christian Encarnacion Strand, another one of the debuts from last year at first base. Second base will be Matt McClain, shortstop Ellie De La Cruz. Third base will probably be Candelario now. Spencer Steer, who saw a lot of third base, will be out in left. An incredible rookie season, even though nobody noticed. Center field will likely be TJ Friedl when he comes back from his injury. Now it's going to be Will Benson. We'll get a little bit of Jake Fraley in right, Stuart Fairchild. A little bit of a platoon out there. And then Jonathan India will see some time around the infield, but also he was not traded and he will be getting some DH at bats. The rotation, Frankie Montas on opening day. Oh my goodness. Hunter Green, the two now, Graham Ashcraft, Nick Martinez, Andrew Abbott. We will see Nick Lodolo back in the rotation at some point in April. Brandon Williamson also kind of in the mix there. And then the bullpen, Alexis Diaz, of course, Eddie D's brother, who's kind of blossomed into a very good closer of his own. Emilio Pagan brought in Nick Martinez. Lucas Sims has been there for a few years as well. And Fernando Cruz in his gnarly, gnarly splitter. What is your big question for the Cincinnati Reds, Jake?
Did they spend the money well? I think this team, this organization has fairly received quite a bit of flack over the last decade for a reluctance to spend money.
Well, they did, and it was like the worst time
spending spree of all time. Because of COVID, they went and got Castellanos and
Moustakas.
Yikes! They didn't spend it well that last time, right? But they did. And then they teared it all down.
Yeah.
They went out and spent some money, and it was interesting how they did it, because instead of putting all of the coin behind one major signing, it kind of dribble-drabbled it a little bit, right? $16 million for Montas, I believe, what, $345 for Candelario, $211 I think it was, for Pagan.
$226 for Martinez.
Right, like they didn't.
$216 for Pagan.
Yeah. $216 for Pagan.
But again, like for a team that, when you compare it to the Pirates, right, another team that has been so reluctant to spend, like this is a lot of money. This is a lot of money. Now their payroll was really low and they have all these young players. But to your point, like, did they get the right pieces to support the young core?
TBD. They easily could have, not easily, this is oversimplifying it, but they could have allocated that money to just overpay for Sonny Gray, right? Or get Cody Bellinger. You know, I know that doesn't really fit the same with their lineup, but they spent enough money in the final figure where they could have spent that money on a bigger piece instead of a bunch of smaller helpful pieces. You're around that team a lot more. I'm curious what your take is on their strategy.
Yeah, it's just super interesting because I got to say, like, and this is a big credit to player development for sure, and just the front office in general. But yeah, I mean, Nick Kroll's been doing pretty well. They've absolutely nailed some trades. I mean, Tyler Mahle for Steer and Strand is one of the better trades we've seen really any team make in terms of getting back, you know, core offensive pieces. I mean, Steer is just really good. Of course, Ellie is a kind of an anomaly in and of himself, but it's a big thing. I can understand the basic headline of let's support the young group with veterans. Are these the right veterans? We'll see. To me, I'm still not worried about, but most curious is when you have this many sophomores, how many of them can avoid a sophomore slump? And maybe that's overrated. These are really talented players. I believe in a lot of these guys about getting better. But you could see some regression coming for a lot of these young players.
Yep.
And some of them will blossom into even better ones, right? And so maybe it balances out. That's the big question. When you have this many, you know, we're doing this 26 and under power rankings and they rank firmly in the top 10. When you have this many young guys on both sides of the ball, it's also on the mound, right? Andrew Abbott looked great. He was kind of shaky down the stretch. What does Lodolo look like when he comes back? Can Green take another step forward? Like, there are so many young players in the mix here. Sometimes that's great, and sometimes that's a little bit sketchy.
And your key player is Frankie Montas.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's just a massive bet, let alone to give him the opening day start. I know it's not just one start, but what that means, what they are telling you is what they told us when they gave him all that money with the questions that he had, which is that they still view him as a number one starter.
Yeah.
You know, they looked at Frankie Montas and said, you know what, we'd rather try this than give Sonny Gray in 3 years and, you know, $80 million, right? To me, and maybe Sonny Gray never would have come, whatever, but like that's kind of what they are saying with that. And I've been admittedly the low guy in Montas for a while now, but being around the team and talking to people around the team, they love him off the field in a way that I don't think I totally recognized about his reputation as a person, as a teammate, but it doesn't, I don't care how great of a guy he is. Like, they're bringing him in to be an awesome pitcher for 30 starts. And there's a lot of reasons to doubt that that's going to happen. But if they're right about that, that's a huge deal.
What was the contract specifically?
So I think he has, I think it's a team option for the second one.
It says one year, $14 million.
116. Oh, it's 14, but 16 because it's guaranteed with the if you were buying out, the second year would be another $2 million. So it's probably a 1 year deal for, you know, $16 million.
Yeah, I mean that's a lot of money for a guy who didn't really pitch last year.
No, I know, and we saw him at the very end of the season. But I don't know. He hasn't looked amazing in spring. Clearly, they trusted the medical. It's a lot of money. You can't be too critical of a one-year deal.
Yeah.
But again, whatever the contract is, the fact that they bring him in and they say, you're starting opening day over Hunter Green, that just says so much about what they think about him.
Yeah.
And if they're right, that's a huge deal. And if they're wrong, they're going to run into possibly some of the same issues as last year.
My key guy is Ellie De La Cruz. Not just for the Reds, but for the sport.
Yes.
Ellie De La Cruz, his fame exceeded his output last year. Mm-hmm. And when that happens with a player, we get a lot of people online being like, well, actually, he's just fun. Ellie was about a league average player. When it all boiled together, he was maybe a little bit above league average. He stole a lot of bases.
And with the defense.
With the defense and the bases, yeah. He was a league average hitter, right? But when it all was said and done, can he be a star? Can he produce enough to be a star and not just be a highlight reel, okay? Because if he is a league average player who is a highlight reel, that's great. That's better than every other
rather have that
league average player in baseball. Okay. Like I'd rather have that than Whit Merrifield
right,
or whatever.
Right.
But if we want non-baseball fans to know about Ellie De La Cruz, which is a timeline that exists in our future.
He's already come pretty far pretty fast. And that's where I'm at with Ellie. Like I believe it might take a little bit of time. If you had to tell me who's gonna be the best player in the Reds, I'd still bet Matt McClain, at least this year if he's healthy. But I just have reflected on this a lot over the last few months. I feel so fortunate. No matter what happens next, I feel so fortunate to have been there at the beginning of Ellie De La Cruz. Because he is someone too. You know, it's not a short drive for me to go down to Cincinnati. I am so excited to go to every Reds game to just see what in the hell he is going to do.
Yeah.
And that's what makes him there. That's a short list of baseball players. That is a very, very short list of baseball players. And he is in that group. Something that makes us laugh. So Joey Votto's not on the team anymore.
Joey Votto's gone.
That's not necessarily funny on its own. But the fact that due to some strange circumstances, including Marte's suspension and some injuries, that they might now have Mike Ford playing the Joey Votto role is just so strange and so funny.
You're like, oh, well, we need a left-handed bench bat who can play some first.
Fan favorite, Mike Ford. I saw Mike Ford hit some big home runs with the Mariners in Cincinnati last year, so maybe they saw that and like, hey, maybe you can be our Joey Votto next year.
Now, I know it's more complicated than that. That like you said, the injuries, Votto wanted to play more often than they were wanted him to play. Still weird.
Sure.
Still weird.
Yeah. Over-under is 82.5 for the Reds of Cincinnati. Again, can they, you would think for them to win 82 last year with all of the flaws in the roster that surely they can win 83. I think Jake's going under. What do you think?
I'm low on Condelario.
You've already gone over on Pittsburgh. You've gone under on Milwaukee.
I'm low on Jimer.
Yep.
I'm low on Montas.
Yep.
And I am low on Ashcraft.
Yep.
And I think I'm going to take the over.
Okay.
Because right.
I'm also going over.
This
Slightly.
If the Reds had had all of their call-ups the whole season last year, they would have made the playoffs.
Probably. Yeah, it's a slightly weird timeline, but I understand what you're saying.
Right. And now they will. I think that Ellie,
except for Marte,
I think that Ellie will be better.
Yeah.
I think Hunter Green will be better than he was.
Yep.
And I think Andrew Abbott and Lodolo are both.
Yeah, Lodolo is a big deal if he's healthy. That is a big one. So I'm going to go over here too. But this kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier, just about how back to that Snell and Cease, like, the NL picture just keeps getting more crowded, and that's why I'm not too optimistic about a playoff push.
Dude,
but I'll still go over.
Like, this team could have used Snell. Like, if you had told the Reds, I don't know if Snell would have gone to the Reds.
Right. There's no way. There's no shot. There's absolutely no way he was signing with the Reds, no matter what the contract was. But I understand what you're saying.
Right.
I understand the point.
Okay.
Let's go to the Cubs. The Chicago Cubs. Whew, they were in the news. I mean, we already talked about councils, so they were on the other side of that. They just took Craig Counsell from the Brewers and told David Ross, thanks for the memories.
Let me get that. Are you going to eat that?
Let me have some of that. David Ross, what's David Ross up to?
Jay chilling in Cedar Rapids.
Tallahassee. What happened to the Cubs last year? The Cubs won 83 games. They were barely ahead of the Reds.
But boy, did they drop the chili that final week. Remember that?
Well, again, because remember, it was like, let's go back a few months. They're sellers. it's not going to happen. They're going to have to trade Bellinger.
Ross is on the hot seat.
Yeah, like this is bad. And then it was like, oh, just kidding. We're going to be good right when it's going to fool everyone and we're going to be good. And then, yikes. This is not a good September.
They went 18-9 in August.
And then what in September?
Uh-huh.
I don't know, tell
if you
they,
count,
what do they do in September, Jake?
If they count October, which for the Cubs is only one game because they didn't make the playoffs, they went 12-17.
Yeah.
Down the stretch.
So that was not great. And
not what you're looking for.
We also looked at them and said, they got to keep Cody Bellinger. And it took a while, but they managed to do it.
The theme of this winter is wait out Scott Boras and God will smile upon you.
Before they did that, they signed Shota Imanaga, the left-handed pitcher from Japan, who I think we are very excited to watch this season. Hector Neris as well, to kind of fortify what has otherwise been an extremely anonymous bullpen. And that's
Michael Bush.
Michael Bush. That was a big trade. Trade some younger prospects. They bring in Michael Bush. They're going to let him be a major league hitter, hopefully.
Is he major league or Bush league, Jordan?
We are about to find out.
Will this be Michael Bush's league?
Yeah.
Michael Bush league?
We're going to find out.
Sorry, I'm
Garrett Cooper also maybe going to be on this roster? We'll see. Who's on this team? Jake, tell me who else is on this team.
Garrett Cooper making the roster. Do you remember Cubs fans clamoring for Matt Mervis for a full month?
I mean, yeah.
I know he's a lefty.
Yeah.
Cooper's a righty. But
Matt Mervis, it's...
We like Mervis.
Didn't really. I mean, he'll be hanging out probably area, in Iowa.
Member of the tribe.
There's a chance the Team Israel legend will resurface in Chicago at some point. But for now, it will be Michael Bush and Cody Bellinger at first base in DH. Behind the plate, Yan Gomes, Miguel Amaya at second. Up the middle, Nico Horner, Dansby Swanson, as good as it gets. Spectacular. Third base currently projected to be Christopher Morel, who's bounced around the league, or the field a lot. Now seems to be slotting in at third base. Maybe some DH time. He was very quietly awesome last year. I mean, streaky, but like legit pop. He is very good.
I think the Cubs moving on, theoretically, from the Madrigal, Patrick Wisdom, hot corner situation.
Right.
And
they're still there. I mean,
I know they're still there, but if Morel can just... Those guys are, in my opinion, that duo is not good enough for a team with the expectations.
But to be clear, plan A at the start of camp was Madrigal at third.
I know.
And him getting hurt means instead of Morel at DH, Bush, we might have some more Talkman in center. You know, of course, we have Happ and Suzuki in the corners in the outfield. It's an interesting alignment. Again, there's still reasons to be excited here, but that third base is going to be, especially because Morel defensively is still a bit of a wild card. Rotation. Justin Steele, huge breakout last year. Another lefty in Shota Imanaga. We'll see him somewhere in the middle of the rotation. Kyle Hendricks is still on the Cubs and only 34?
He's awesome, dude.
That seems impossible. Jordan Wicks, huge fan of that guy. Another young left-hander. And then Javier Assad, who we will laugh about shortly. Odbert Alzale is the closer. Hector Neris, Julian Merriweather, and Mark Leiter Jr., who was quietly awesome last year. What is our big question about the Chicago Cubs? I believe it is also Craig Counsell related.
Yeah, does he make them that much better immediately? Like, they spent $40 million to hire someone who doesn't play baseball. Is that worth
it? Baseball? Could Craig Counsell play third?
And Craig, like, okay, here you go. They spent $40 million on Craig Counsell.
Yeah.
Could they have just spent that $40 million on Matt Chapman?
Yes. That's what I'm saying.
You know?
I would have done that.
Matt Chapman and David Ross, to me, is going to give
you rather have... This is a good poll.
For Cubs
fans. Would Cubs fans rather have David Ross and Matt Chapman or Craig Counsell and whatever the plan is at third base right now?
Let us know.
BaseballBarbercast@gmail.com. I think that's a good question. Are we stupid? I just told you.
Matt Chapman.
Yeah.
And David Ross.
Yeah.
I think that has to be the pick. No, I know that's not actually...
not for them. I mean, Jed's a smart guy, but it's just funny. That's just, again, this is a more, you know, philosophical. I'd rather have the good baseball players than the good manager. But for what Matt Chapman got, again, it's a different equation now that we know that he didn't get a whole lot of money.
Yeah.
But they could have waited out, right? I mean, they waited out Bellinger to some degree. They generally did well there. They didn't give him, what was that, MLB trade rumors projection, 9-260. Didn't have to do that, thankfully. Wow. But anyway, I mean, that's a good one big question. That's, yeah,
It's just
it is. It's a huge commitment. It is an unprecedented managerial decision on many levels.
It's a big deal. They gave him a lot of money. They went through a lot of weird PR to get him. How impactful is it right away is a huge storyline for them. My key player, though, is Shota Imanaga. I am fascinated by him. Really interesting fastball shape. I've talked about this a lot on the pod. The rising fastball, high in the zone. The Cubs rotation. I know I need to see Justin Steele do this one more time before I can really believe it. If they can, if Imanaga is like a 2 or a 3 instead of a 4 or a 5, that is such a big deal.
Yeah.
And it takes this rotation from good to very good. Spoilers, I'm high on this group. Mm-hmm. I think Hendricks still bangs. I think Jordan Wicks is going to pitch in this league for 15 years.
Yep.
I think Steele is real. And I think Imanaga is a mid-rotation 3-starter and not a 5-starter. Mm-hmm. And Jameson Taillon was sneaky good down the stretch.
Yeah, hurt right now, but I do think Taillon will not be. He was so bad last year to start the year, and hopefully he will be back and better. So no, I'm with you on all that. My key player is Michael Busch. Because for the Cubs to have this strong farm system of guys that are coming to the big leagues, you know, we mentioned Mervis, but obviously a big decision to have PCA start the year in AAA. They have some other guys there where it's like, okay, we're going to get, but to go out and acquire someone from outside the organization and say, you are going to be in our lineup immediately. The minor league track record says that makes all the sense in the world, but that is a pretty big bet there. And sure, Bellinger kind of affords them some flexibility there in the case that Bush, you know, falls on his face. You just put Bellinger back at first, and Talkman was sneaky okay last year. But I'm excited to see Bush finally get his chance, really. And he's a new face in this lineup. Like a lot of these other guys, we saw them last year, and a lot of them were good. And that made their offense pretty good. But Bush can either elevate it or be a bit of a whiff in terms of a big offseason acquisition.
The one thing that I really love about the Cubs this year and why I will take the over in a second is they have a second level of upper minors depth with top prospects that can come up and contribute in the middle of the season on both sides of the ball, right? If someone gets hurt in the outfield, Pete Crow Armstrong is a really good option to bring up and play for you. Mm-hmm. If someone gets hurt in the rotation and they bring up Cade Horton in June, who has established himself as one of the best pitching prospects in baseball.
Yep.
Cade Horton is a guy who could start game 3 of a playoff series this year. If like rookie comes up.
Again, it's Grayson Rodriguez, right? It's that he's at the same stage as Grayson was last year. And that doesn't always go well. You don't know what you're getting there. And unlike with the Orioles, where they like needed Grayson in the middle of the summer, the Cubs might not need Cade Horton in the same way,
correct,
which is a good place to be.
Yeah.
But I love him. I love Matt Shaw. And I agree with your point.
I just, the reason I'm picking them to win the division is I like the depth. Mm-hmm. It's not exciting, but they have Dom Smith in AAA. Okay. They have David Bodie just sitting there in AAA.
David Bodie.
They have Jorge Alfaro just sitting there in AAA. They have Matt Shaw, who is a top 35, 50 prospect in baseball, who could come up this year. And then they have Alexander Canario and Pico Armstrong, who are two top prospects in the upper minors. Mm-hmm. And I think that that level, like that's what wins you a division, right? Is the second wave of players that can come up and fill in. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited. And I think in a division like this, where it's going to be really close, that's a big deal. But what makes us laugh about this team?
In the beginning of August last year, Javier Assad, who has bounced between the rotation and the bullpen for the Cubs over the last couple of years, was on a heater. He was dominant in July. And Mark Leiter Jr., his fellow bullpen mate, gave an interview postgame. And stone cold to the camera said, I believe he is one of the best pitchers in baseball, to be completely honest with you. And this is a situation where I love this so much because if you're Mark Leiter Jr., and this is true in every, this is a great thing about spring training, right? You go to any camp and you talk to anyone, especially pitchers too, who are like, just watch your bullpen. That guy looks unbelievable. And if you're Mark Leiter Jr. and your universe is being a Cubs reliever, I can understand when Javier Assad has allowed one run over the last 2 months, this is my world. He is one of the best pitchers in baseball.
Yeah.
But it's a funny quote to read.
Pitchers respect the hell out of long relief.
Yes. so much, because they'll tell you, like, that's the toughest job in the sport. There are a lot of different positions where they'll be like, that's the toughest.
No, it's the hardest job.
To be clear, it's catcher.
The catcher?
Can we just make sure we're on the same page about that?
We thank those who serve.
It's the catcher.
Those who have served. But, those who serve and those who will serve.
But you're so right. Because pitchers. There are a lot of relief. And by the way, Mark Leiter Jr. has been one of these.
Yes. And he knows what it's like. And what I love about this clip is that it is not, in Mark Leiter Jr.'s mind, hyperbole. He believes to his core that Javier Assad is one of the best pitchers in baseball, to be completely honest with you, which is objectively just not true. But,
but it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
It's his world. And I love it.
And so, we're living in it.
Yes. But by the way, Javier Assad is good.
Yep.
Really good pitcher. Good pitcher to have around. The over-under is 84.5. Sounds like you're taking the over. I think I am as well. But like I said, I do believe this division will be really crunched together.
I think this team is going to win the division and not win a playoff game.
Okay. Well, how many wins? If you're like super in on the Cubs. So how many wins?
88.
Okay. All right. Not too excited. Let's move to our final team, the Cardinals of St. Louis. What happened last year? Sorry, Cardinals fans. You're going to have to relive it here for a couple minutes. They stunk. The St. Louis Cardinals, finally, the whole league has been waiting for them to suffer through a season like this. This is the team that seemed impervious to this kind of season. No matter who was on the team, they're like, yeah, they'll be fine. They'll be good. They'll be at the top of the division. They'll be in the playoffs again, right? It finally happened.
Yes.
Despite a roster that had a lot of still really good famous players, it was a catastrophe.
29 MLB fan bases pulling up to our biggest hater's funeral in our finest suit and our sunglasses with our hands locked.
Now, fortunately for the Cardinals, now let's spin this in a positive direction, right? They lose 91 games, just disaster. But it was so clear, so early, that it was going to be bad and that it wasn't going to happen for them, that they were able to absolutely cash in at the trade deadline and deal off a ton of guys for a very, very solid collection of players who may be helping them as soon as this year, especially the Jordan Montgomery trade. Obviously, the Rangers do not regret that whatsoever, but guys like Tekoa Roby and Thomas Ejasi will help the Cardinals in the near future. But they were bad. It was so weird. It was truly, it kind of got lost by, there were a lot of disappointing teams last year, but for the Cardinals to be bad, for Busch Stadium to be empty at times, was for them. They were booing them. It was quietly one of the weirdest parts of the entire season. And even though they didn't have as much hype or weren't as expensive as teams like the Padres and the Mets, it was just as shocking. And we should not lose sight of that.
What did they do over the winter? They sent Adam Wainwright to the country concert in the sky.
What do you mean? He's out and about. He is on tour, as we know.
On tour. The Cardinals looked at last season and they said to themselves, you know what we need?
We got to get older.
We need to get older and we need pitchers with fewer strikeouts. And they went and signed Lance Lynn, Sonny Gray, and Kyle Gibson.
Homecoming
to join the rotation. A rotation that will have four players 35 or older when they're all healthy. Gibson, Michaelis, Lance Lynn, Sonny Gray. Steven Matz feels like he's 35.
Spiritually 35.
Spiritually 35. That's what they did this winter.
Yeah.
Who did they have?
And then they signed Brandon Crawford. Weird. And brought back Matt Carpenter to make sure
that we were
the oldest team in baseball. So, fascinating. Absolutely fascinating offseason. And they did all that very early, right? I guess Crawford was later. But
when's the Matt Chapman?
In like 3 days.
The Matt Chapman country concert. Matt Chapman. Matt Carpenter.
When's the Matt Carpenter country concert? I don't know. I don't know his musical musings. Let's tell you about who's on this team. Wilson Contreras, another bizarre part of last season. They were like, you are not allowed to catch. And then when he came back, he was awesome. But at that point, everyone had made fun of him for two straight months and made fun of the Cardinals for two straight months. That people didn't really notice that he was basically back to being Wilson Contreras for the last 3 months. I think he's still very good.
Defensively, he's very good at throwing runners out. Yeah. He's not very good at framing.
No.
He's pretty mid at blocking.
Yeah.
And we got the sense that he's not great at handling a pitching staff.
But improved enough.
But improved enough over the course of the season. So if Wilson Contreras can be like a C-plus defensive catcher,
still a great player.
Still a great player. And Cardinals fans, your minds are just warped because you watched Yadi Molina play for 15 years. Like, it's okay.
Good problem to have. First base, Paul Goldschmidt. Second base, Nolan Gorman, who I am dubbing Gen Z Dan Ugla.
DH the man.
probably should be DHing. Third base, Nolan Arenado. Shortstop, Mason Wynn, the 22-year-old rookie. Said to see him. The outfield right now with some injuries to DeLarge Nootbaar and Tommy Edman, Alec Burleson, and Jordan Walker in the corners, and then Dylan Carlson, who's somehow still only 25. My goodness.
Crazy.
And then Brendan Donovan, we'll probably see him, you know, of course, bounce around. That's what Brendan Donovan does. At the rotation, you already said, Michaelis, Gibson, Lynn, Matt, Zach Thompson, 26-year-old left-hander, bullpen, Ryan Helsley, still awesome. Giovanni Gallegos, Andrew Kittredge, another guy to make sure we get one more old guy in there. How is he only 34? That seems impossible. And by the way, and then the last bit of big Cardinals news is they extended Ollie Marmol, who, you know, during last season and even going into the winter, it was like, is Ollie going to stick around?
We had this conversation yesterday about which managers could you envision getting canned this year? And it is a very short list just because of how much turnover we've had in the last two seasons. Mm-hmm. And we could only really picture four of them.
Yeah. Not even. But we'll see.
And
will be fired this year, probably.
If not for the Ollie Marmol extension, he would have been top of the list.
Right. But instead, he gets an extension because he was entering the last year of his contract and it would have been looming over him all year. And now they've said he is our guy.
For now.
And also, and while they did, and while they did make some additions on the pitching staff, like largely they are rolling it back on offense. And I totally understand that. Because I think this offensive group is fantastic, and I'm super in on a lot of these young hitters. We'll get to them in a second. But the big question is still, I mean, listen, we just watched the Mets attempt this, and it did not go well.
Yeah.
Sonny Gray is already injured. And the upside, like, even if you're projecting a bounce back for Lance Lynn and Kyle Gibson, who I don't think was as bad as his ERA last year, but still, like, I'm trying to see the upside here, even if it doesn't go catastrophically poorly. That is a concern. I am definitely still there. I mean, they're just going to say, hey, go munch some innings and we're going to try to score, you know, seven runs a game. It might work, but I don't know. You're concerned for sure.
Yeah, I just...
Fairly so.
Their winter, in my opinion, did not address the problem that was obvious about last year's team.
Sure.
And they banged last year. The pitching rotation was not great. I like Sonny Gray. I think Sonny Gray is still good. But I think this
Sonny Gray was tremendous last year.
He was incredible. He was incredible. But I just, it's a lot of older pitchers without a lot of starting pitching depth right below them. And it's very easy to envision the bottom falling out in a similar manner to how things went last year. For that reason, Sonny Gray is my key pitcher because he's the only one who can give anything resembling like high level upside. I just can't envision a world where Michaelis, Lynn, Matt Thompson, or Gibson get Cy Young votes.
Right.
Right?
No, I agree with that. And again, though, it's like they also had a lot of innings to replace. You know, you look at their top innings got, by the way, Miles Michaelis started 35 games last year.
Only pitcher in baseball.
Only pitcher, right? Okay, he throws 200 innings and was not very good. But of course, by the second half, I mean, he's just going out there trying to get them through the season.
Yeah, he's...
But yeah, I mean, this is a lot of innings to replace. And if it goes badly, the difference this year is, I mentioned a guy like Roby. They have the pitching prospects now are much closer. The pitching prospects who we actually feel kind of good about, like Michael McGreevy and like Roby and like Graceffo, you know,
Matthew Libertor.
Libertor, we'll see, right? Thompson, I think, is interesting. Totally fair concern. Like,
I don't trust the organization, pitching development apparatus, to get the most out of these guys. Yep. They just haven't done that.
Yep, that's fair. My key player is Jordan Walker, though. Because while everything you said about the pitching is true, I still think another reason why their season went sideways last year is because Arenado and Goldschmidt were not good. And then by the time they had started to figure it out, the season was lost. And the young guys were kind of also up and down. And by the time they were kind of in their groove, it didn't matter. Jordan Walker, at this time last season, we were talking about him as a top prospect in baseball. He has so little hype this year. I don't think anyone's talking about him, and he's still 21. He's still 21, and he wasn't bad. I mean, he was bad defensively, for sure. But 114 OPS plus is a 21-year-old? Like, why can't he take a leap to 130? Like, why can't he be, you know, one of their three best hitters?
Who would you rather have this season, him or Wyatt Langford?
Oh, man, that's a great question.
Just because Langford, understandably, has just gotten so much hype this spring for the Rangers. And he's never taken an at-bat.
And he's
bat.
Younger.
And he's young. Walker is younger than yeah. Langford. And Langford has never taken a big league plate appearance.
Yeah.
And it's just,
I think I'm going Walker. And that's not yeah. because I'm in on Langford too.
Yeah.
For this season though, I think I am going. I feel safer yeah. about Walker.
I think
he wasn't striking out a lot.
No.
You know, he was the launch angle went up as the season went on. Like that was exactly what we wanted him to do. I just think we're underrating him like crazy.
Yeah.
Even if he's like a meh right fielder.
Think about all the buzz around Spencer Jones.
I know. I'm like,
right? Like
Jordan Walker's 2 years younger than him. Like what do you want him to do? Like I know. Anyway, yeah. So Jordan Walker for me is still big. I mean, there's a lot of young hitters that I can hype up here. I do love Gorman too, but Walker is the one that can be, he's the key. I mean, Goldie and Arenado are still good players, but the face of the next Cardinals offense is Jordan Walker. It has to be. Yeah. So that's, I think, the key for me. What makes us laugh about the Cardinals? This is a great note to end on.
We would like to enter a quote into the pantheon of baseball barbacast, silly baseball quotes.
Okay.
This is a first ballot Hall of Famer. This is a tweet from John Denton, 555. John Denton, who...
MLB.com.
MLB.com.
For the Cardinals.
Right. St. Louis Cardinals right-handed pitcher Miles Michaelis on opening versus the Dodgers.
So their opening day against the Dodgers when the in Dodger Stadium next week.
Quote, "We're not exactly a low payroll team."
True.
"But you got the Dodgers playing checkbook baseball. We're going to be the hardest working group of Midwestern farmers that we could be. It would be great to stick it to the Dodgers." So let's just a couple different things. Number one, "We're not exactly a low payroll team" validates the rest of the quote. Because yes. if he hadn't said that, the responses to this would just be screenshots of the Cardinals payroll. Mm-hmm. And there still was some of that I saw on Twitter in response to this.
And again,
but I think that is a fair point, but I kind of think it's invalid. He understands the criticism he's going to receive for the quote.
Yes.
And I like that.
Their payroll, luxury tax payroll is over $200 million, but it is not into the tax.
Yep.
They rank 11th in luxury tax payroll. So they're not a low payroll team. That is true, though.
What I don't like about this is the idea that spending money on baseball players is bad. If I was the union.
Checkbook baseball. Sounds good to me.
Sounds good to me. The union's probably like, what the heck are you saying, Miles Michaelis? Like, checkbook baseball. What do you want, my guy? Like. No one's.
Did you not want to sign? Like, Miles Michaelis, you've made a good amount of money in your career.
I know.
I'm happy for you, but like, come on. Anyway, but Midwestern farmers.
Yes.
Because when we heard that, first of all, it's funny. Immediately when you read it, it's hilarious. But then you're like, who's a Midwestern farmer on this team?
Well,
who is also, the closest to being a Midwestern farmer on the Cardinals?
Before we get into that, he's tapping also into like kind of a Fox News style,
of course. I mean,
like motif here of. Yeah. You know, coastal elitism versus the hardworking real American.
Country. Come on.
Yeah.
The Midwestern farmers. But again, if you're going to say Midwestern farmers, we best be fact checking you on that.
And you better believe that Baseball Barbacast is on that. There are 26 players on the projected opening day roster for the St. Louis
Cardinals. Every team.
On every team, but the Cardinals are included.
The Cardinals are projected to have 26 players on their opening day roster.
None of their position players can be described as Midwest farmers.
I can't speak. I'm not going to comment on whether they are farmers or not because I don't know too specifically.
They're not Midwestern.
We can definitively say nobody on the Pacific Bear group you would describe as a Midwestern.
No. The closest, Pennsylvania, if you think that's the Midwest. Mike Ciani, who might be on the team. He's from Philly. So that's not the Midwest.
No.
Pittsburgh maybe is the Midwest.
No.
But you got a lot of California, a lot of Georgia, a lot of Texas.
International.
International guys.
I don't know if he's talking about like Midwestern Venezuela. I don't know, farmers, but we're going to assume not. We know what he means. Okay, so let's go to the pitching staff.
Yep.
Miles Michaelis is a Florida man through and through. That is not the Midwest.
No.
So he's not talking about himself.
Midwest
but
Florida?
He is saying we, right? We're going to be the hardest working group of Midwestern farmers.
He's from Jupiter, which is east.
Okay. Whatever. The point is, he said we, and we are going to be the hardest group of Midwestern farmers. And again, I think what he's trying to do, again, thinking about it in big picture, is he's trying to embody, he's saying, you Cardinals fans listening, we are Midwestern farmers.
We hear you. We see you. We stand with you. Again.
Who is a Midwestern farmer?
Kyle Gibson, Indiana.
Fine. Yeah.
That counts.
Went to Mizzou.
Lance Lynn. Indiana.
I'm an Indiana resident. Am I a Midwestern farmer?
No. Zach Thompson.
I think I'm closer to being a Midwestern farmer than some of these California guys.
Zach Thompson. Indiana.
Yeah. How about this?
Three Indianans. Steven Matz.
Yeah.
Long Island, not no. Midwest. No. The bullpen, I don't even know if we went through it. Wasn't a lot of obvious.
No.
Maybe Ryan Helsley is from Oklahoma, if you think that's the Midwest. I don't think that's the Midwest.
Mm-hmm. Is he a farmer? I don't know.
Is he a farmer? I don't know.
Sonny Gray, Tennessee. No.
No.
Is he a farmer?
Andrew Kittredge is from Washington State.
Yeah. So again, fascinating, incredible line. Miles Michaelis is the kind of person that I didn't, this is a good example of.
Yep.
It's possible he was like smirking when he said this to the degree that he kind of knew that this was what he was saying was truly hilarious.
Yeah.
But again, when you read it on Twitter.com, which is definitely what it's still called, it's hilarious. One of the funniest quotes we've ever seen. So we are laughing about that. 85 and a half.
Miles Michaelis said MidwesternFarmersOnly.com.
I hope that is a real website. It is now. Cardinals fans, make that happen. 85 and a half is the over-under. I am smashing the over. I don't think there's any way this team is bad again. I totally share your concerns about the pitching staff. I just refuse to believe they will be but 2 years in a row.
I don't think they will be but 2 years in a row, but I think they can be lower back. not quite but adjacent. Okay. So I'm going to take the under. Okay. I'd say like 79 wins. I think that's like totally reasonable. And I don't think this pitching staff is either good or going to stay healthy.
Yeah.
So totally fair. Hannah Montana said, the worst of both worlds.
That's the NL Central. We did it. We previewed the National League Central. We have one division left. That is the AL Central, which we'll talk about on Friday.
Saving
the worst division
for last.
Hopefully better than last year. Could not possibly be worse than last year, the AL Central. The NL Central is going to be fun this year. So it sounds like I'm going Cardinals. I think the order we did it is the order I would have it in, but I don't know.
Fantasy League.
Oh, yes. Fantasy League update, and then we'll say goodbye.
If you are in the league, you have received an email invitation from us. I think we ended up around 230 people. If you didn't make it, from the bottom of our hearts, it's because we hate you. We appreciate everybody who sent us emails.
It was not easy.
It was not easy.
You made it very challenging for us, and I mean that in the best way possible.
We were genuinely touched that many people wanted to play fake sports with us.
Yes. We're going to do our best to respond to some of these emails because they were very kind.
We got to set up some sort of Facebook group or Discord so people could community can interact.
No more Facebook group. We got to move on from that.
We got to grow up.
But we appreciate it. So thank you all for listening. The draft will be on Sunday night. We will be live streaming it. So even if you are not part of the league, you will be able to enjoy the content created from it. So stay tuned for that. That'll be on our YouTube. Sunday Night Baseball will be happening 6 p.m. Eastern, Sunday the 24th.
It is going to be a 16-team league. Jordan and I are two of the 16.
Yeah.
Another member that I feel comfortable revealing right now is former Pirates pitcher Stephen Brault. Will be in the league. You may know him from his anthem singing or his sick-ass tattoos. And pitching in the major leagues. He will be in the league, as will 13 other wonderful human beings.
We'll leave it there. We'll leave it there.
There will be three catchers.
Three catchers in a 16-team league. We cannot wait. Thank you all for listening to this episode of Baseball Barbercast. Again, you can email us, baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing. Thank you to our man, Wolf, here at WTF Studios, making this possible in New York City. I'm heading home, so we'll be back on our respective remote locations on Friday.
I'm going to be in New Orleans.
Oh, Jake will be on the road, so you can look forward to that hotel background. But until then, thank you all for listening. We appreciate the support, and we will talk to you about the American League Central on Friday.